Hey there, Hoops fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri. You are about to listen to a new episode of NBA Takedown, but just a quick FYI that myself, Jeff, and Sean had some very mysterious overlapping Wi-Fi issues during the recording of this episode. We suspect that our good friends at Amazon AWS may have had something to do with that. But alas, we were able to clean it up well enough and with a little bit of post-production magic. I don't think anybody is going to know the difference, but in case you were listening and it's like, this seems a little bit odd, just wanted to say a quick 2 seconds at the top as to why that was. Okay, that's it. Without further ado, here's the latest episode of Takedown. Hey there, Hoops fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of NBA Takedown. Coming at you at a little afternoon, a day after Super Sunday. I'm here with my two buddies, who I know enjoyed themselves some basketball and football yesterday. Jeff's camera's going in and out, so I'm going to start with Sean. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. It's a very good day because... every time the Patriots lose, an angel gets its wings. Shout out to my homegirl, Brie Vanessa, for that.
I love it. I never heard that before.
Mm-hmm. No, it's absolutely true.
Where'd you watch the game? Who'd you watch the game with?
I watched the game at my good friend, his cousin owns a bar in the Bronx. So I went there to watch the game. Him and his siblings and people. Low key, nothing crazy.
Same here. We had my wife's parents over for the game. As I noted on the post game show, but I guess it caused some confusion. I was slow cooking a pork butt, but apparently not everybody calls it a pork butt. It's otherwise known as a pork shoulder.
I've never heard the term pork butt either. So
you've never heard the term pork butt?
Not for things that are edible, I should say.
So if you look it up, it's referred to as a pork shoulder. It's referred to as a pork, but it's a big piece of pork that you put in the slow cooker, and it is used to make pulled pork.
I don't doubt that this exists. I'm just saying I was not familiar with the term. That's all.
Okay. Well, I can tell you it was very good, and everybody was enjoying themselves. Made some salsas and a couple of little things here, but my only commentary on the game was happy for Sam Darnold, fuck Boston, and I don't know if I texted you this or I texted somebody else this, but never in my life, and obviously I make jokes a lot about how old I feel on a daily basis, never in my life have I felt as old as I did watching the halftime show.
Why did you feel old?
I just...
You're not familiar with the music?
I am familiar with the gentleman. Mr. Bunny? Is that?
Mr. Bunny, yes.
Mr. Bunny?
Yes.
And there were one or two songs where I was like, okay, if it was 20 years ago and I was out and I heard
20,
this.
Come on, man.
I could get down with this, but it's just, I think popular music, it was a confirmation that it's not just him. It's just popular music has passed me by. Like, I don't really listen to anything that's come out. The only thing I've listened to in the past couple of years that's come out in the last few years that I've actually liked is Charlie XCX. That's really it.
And that makes sense because you have daughters.
It has nothing to do with them.
Oh, well, then I'd love...
I adopt some of their favorite... Like, my younger daughter loves the K-pop Demon Hunters album. I get down to that. And then, obviously... You know, Taylor Swift, Life of a Showgirl. I've heard all of those songs dozens of times. And I got to tell you, they're not that bad. They're pretty good.
So funny, I did not listen to Taylor Swift's most recent album, but you know,
you're missing out.
Maybe I'm the old man.
No, I don't think you are.
I am the old man, but you know.
No. Okay. Let us get going here.
2-1-0. Ignition, liftoff.
Sean, I'm stealing your year-long bit for my takeoff take, and okay. I'm sorry to do this. It's yours. You own it, so I'm just leasing it from you.
Fair enough.
Which is that if I have to listen to any more, it's not even, it's like, it's become a thing that people say in passing, like referring to whether it's watered down East or like lesser conference or yada, yada, yada. Can we, like, I'm not faulting the notion that there is a discrepancy somewhere in the mix, but it's a really specific discrepancy, which is that the favorite in the league plays in the West.
Yes.
No one's disagreeing about that, right? You're not Nobody. Disagreeing about that. Nobody. I'm not disagreeing about that. We're all agreeing about that. If you had to pick a number two in the league as the team that, if you listed all 30 teams, all things being equal, is probably the second best team when healthy, I also think it's fine to acknowledge that that team is Denver. They have the best player. Yes. They have kind of done it before with this general core, Murray, Gordon. Obviously, they've swapped out some other pieces, although Bruce Brown is back. Are you okay with that?
I'm fine with that also.
Okay. That's it. That's it. There's no other discrepancy. And if you want to make it out to be that, just point that out. Stop making it about that the entire East stinks and the entire West is awesome, because all I'm doing is looking at the standings and I'm saying, huh, go down the whole list of all of these different teams. Well, could the Pistons be a top, be the third or one of the top three teams in the West? Absolutely.
Yes.
Could the Knicks?
Yes.
Absolutely. Could the Celtics? Probably.
Yes.
The Cavs, who have stunk to holy hell all year long, and always they've been one of the most disappointing teams in the league, if not the most disappointing team in the league. They have 32 wins. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many wins the fourth place Houston Rockets have?
I'm going to go on a limb and guess 32.
That is correct. So it's like, and you go all the way down the line. And you can even go down to the bottom of the play-in picture where the Charlotte Hornets, gangbusters that they are, break up Charlotte mm-hmm. 9 games in a row. Like, you take them right now over the Blazers, the Clippers, probably the Warriors. You know, and I just, like, we could make cases for all these different teams. Both conferences have disappointing teams. Both conferences have very good teams. I'm sick of hearing it. That's all. I'm sick of hearing it. That's all. That's my takeoff take.
It's the similar discussion that we have in college football with the SEC, where the SEC is better than everyone else, and the SEC this, SEC that, and very similar, the SEC, like, yes, Alabama was really good for years. Yes, and there was a time where it was like Alabama LSU, or it was Alabama Auburn, whatever. But like, hey, guess what, Mississippi State? You're not good because Alabama's good.
There right? you go.
And now I have to hear that, like the idea that the Western Conference is this bloodbath. Listen, are there years where the East was garbage and the West was amazing? Absolutely. This ain't one of those years. No. I've had a running bit this season where I say, like, you know, the sixth seed in the East has this record, the sixth seed in the West has that record, you know, react accordingly. When you mentioned the Rockets, I've pulled up the standings, and I'm seeing – the 10 seed in the East is 25-28, and the 10 seed in the West is 25-28. The one seed in the East has 13 losses. The one seed in the West, who I was told was going to go 78-4, has 13 losses. Like the West, as a Knicks fan, I say this all the time, there's no team that scares me in the Western Conference. None. None. None, 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 none. And especially, and do you remember? And I was early on this. I said, I don't understand why the Rockets are this locked-in, automatic top-five championship contender. Like, I just don't see it.
Well, I've always been a
believer. Well, we could pull up how they've been doing over the last, I mean, it's really more than a month now.
Is it time to panic? Is it time to trade everybody and fire everybody?
Version of Kenneth Walker.
Fire Emay. But trade,
KD, I cashed out a lot. On right now, my season is over. Continues. By the way, the East is only three games like under Sean says. His go to bet is the over under 2.5 for people to make a pass. Which
yeah,
they're within steer in a minute. That didn't happen, but you know, go figure.
But what I usually do is I bet the first touchdown bet, and I go for like five or six people with long odds, because the money that you invest in, if one of those six hit, at worst you make a small profit. At best, you'll make a good chunk of change. So I believe I got Barner at 13-1.
Very nice. Well,
and fun. Then in game, and shout out to our betting and sweating chat in game. There was two bets that I was looking at when he got to the fourth quarter. First of all, waiting for the first touchdown was cinema. I didn't think we was going to have to wait that long for the first touchdown. But, you know, once you're in it, you're in it. I bet Cooper Kupp. I didn't bet, but I was saying I was looking at Cooper Kupp. He was like 22-1.
Okay.
And then the Seattle defense special teams. Because I said, at some point, they're coughing it up and you're going to get an opportunity. I placed the bet. They had the interception, and my man ran it back to midfield. And then that last play, that towards the end where they got the what I thought was a strip sack fumble touchdown, but it was actually an interception. It went down to the interception.
Yeah. Wasn't clear in the moment.
I don't care. Either way, I made it. So all in all, what I thought was going to happen was Seattle pretty much dominated. So I had a good time.
All right. Very well done. Good job by you. Yes, Sean.
That's amazing. So that's amazing, because I had bet in that game over 1.5 interceptions, and I thought that was a fumble recovery. But now you say, like, oh, it's a. So I went and looked at my.
You hit.
And I hit.
You just realized you made money?
I made more money than I thought. Well, but thanks. I made a good amount of money yesterday also. So, yes, because I also had AJ Barner first touchdown. Let's get it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sean, do you have a takeoff take before we get to our tanking discussion?
Yes. We have to make a decision about what matters more, regular season wins or playoff wins, because when the Knicks beat the mess out of the Hawks, the response is, well, Trae Young is still the king of New York because he won that playoff series 5 years ago. Meanwhile, now Pistons fans are peacocking around the NBA because they've beat the crap out of the Knicks two games in a row. And the response is, well, we beat you on the playoffs when it mattered, but apparently that doesn't matter now. So I just want to know, like, can we get a consensus? Do regular season wins matter or do they not matter? Because it seems like whatever the Knicks are involved. Whatever the Knicks have not done is what matters.
All right. So we got a few situations that have been developing over the last several days in the NBA. I'm going to start with the Kings. So I don't know if you guys were paying attention to what's been going on in our favorite city of Sacramento. They had a couple of losses over the weekend. Friday, 3-point loss to the Clippers. No Domantas Sabonis, Zach LaVine, Russ, and DeMar all played 20 minutes or less. And then a gentleman by the name of Daquan Plowden played 14 minutes. Hold on. We're not done with Daquan. Saturday, the Kings were up by 3 on Cleveland entering the fourth quarter. Sabonis didn't play. LaVine didn't play. Neek Clifford, who we saw a couple times this season against the Knicks, played 40 minutes. And Daquan Plowden, in that game, played 39 minutes. I'm going to challenge you two fine gentlemen to our own version here at NBA Takedown of what's the game on inside the NBA? Who he play for. It's a little bit of a different version.
Okay.
So as you can see, there are five handsome young gentlemen up on the screen right now. One of these gentlemen is Daquan Plowden. You each get one guess. It's a lineup, so it's a six-person lineup. You each get one guess as to who is Daquan Plowden. I want you to think very carefully about this.
Okay.
You can talk it out if you want.
I'm going to do us a favor. I'm going to eliminate the guy on their lower left.
I thought you might do that, and I just would offer you that how do you know that that gentleman's parents weren't maybe a little bit eccentric? And wanted to have their son stand out.
I don't know anything. I'm just taking an educated guess.
Okay. So you're ruling out the gentleman with the lighter with the hair flopping down on his forehead.
Yes. Continue. The guy in the upper right looks familiar, so I'm gonna eliminate him.
Okay.
this is a scary exercise. I'm gonna go on the left.
Hold on. So I thought I heard upper left. We're you're going in and out again. Jeff, can you hear me okay? How you doing?
Yeah. You're a little underwater, but I can hear you. I think top middle is Nick Clifford. I believe that's Nick Clifford. So we've eliminated 50% of the board. I feel like it's not middle bottom. I feel like it's not. All right, I'm going to say second row middle is Plowden.
Second row middle. And what was your answer, Sean?
Upper left.
And your answer was upper left. Those are both exceptional guesses.
And they're incorrect.
Unfortunately, neither guess was correct.
That was my I'm sick.
It's okay. I looked at the lower right too, and then I was like, that seems too stereotypical. And here we
That's are. Another reason why I faded away from it.
So nobody here is Nick Clifford. I will just say that. You guys missed on Chucky Hepburn. Which is
I recognize Chucky Hepburn's face. I just couldn't remember his name.
But I thought that was Jacob Toppin.
I just know he had a recognizable face.
Shout out to Enrique Freeman, Jamal Telfort, Stanley Umude, and of course Sean's boy, Maxim, Max for short, Shulga, who is not from this country. These are all NBA players who have played in games this year. But none have played 39 minutes in an NBA game like Mr. Plowden has, like he did for Sacramento the other night. That's where we're at with the Kings. The Wizards, as we know, also getting in on this action. They traded for AD and then promptly shut him down for the year. They finished a game versus the aforementioned Kings about a week ago with the following five players. Scalabissier, who was on a 10-day and is no longer with the team. AJ Johnson, who has since been traded to Dallas. Sharif Cooper, who's on a two-way. Anthony Gill, who's on the minimum. And then Will Riley, who is a rookie. That's a crunch time lineup they played against the Kings and actually managed to win that game. And then there's the Jazz, who had maybe the most blatant tanking example that we've seen in some time. Up 7 entering the fourth quarter against the Orlando Magic. Shout out to your Orlando Magic, Sean. And then they proceeded to sit Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen for the entire fourth quarter. They also sat Lauri Markkanen in the fourth quarter of the previous game, which was a two-point loss to the Hawks, only played 24 minutes there. And then he actually didn't play in the last 6 minutes in a game versus Indy a little before that. But Utah won that game because guess what Indy was doing? They were sitting there with their good players on the second night of a back-to-back. So, Jeff, I'm going to go to you first. Do we have a problem in the NBA?
Of course. We've been had a problem. And I think it's systemic. It's a systemic issue we're taking. The more you modify the rules, the more depth teams will be at circumventing the rules. It's just a matter of figuring out how to work across the margins or between the margins to be able to gamify tanking. And that's what's happened. You can institute whatever rules you want at this point other than abolishing the draft, and fans will find a way. I mean, short of abolishing the draft, teams will find a way to circumvent this process. Because how can you legitimately say with evidence that they are purposefully tanking if they are following the normal process to report their players, to quote unquote develop players? Because they can easily say, we know what Laurie has, we know what JJJ has, we want to see what we have in the other players. And that's the reason why we're playing them in the fourth quarter. Yep. Sure, we might win, but we may figure out how to move best going forward by taking a serious look at this personnel. They can have a great counsel to argue in their favor. How is this different than what the Cavs did with Jalen Tyson or the Knicks did with Mohamed Diawara or any other team that's looking for foul money and trying to play their players? They can argue it. And unless you have documents that can prove that they're doing this on purpose, they found a way. They found a way to game the system.
Yeah. Zero disagreement. Sean, what are your thoughts on this? As Sean leaves the stage, Jeff Dorsey.
He was shocked, mortified, speechless at the amount, the gross level of shameless tanking going on in the NBA.
I feel like this our Wi-Fi issues in this episode or whatever issues we're having to get through are perfectly suited for this conversation because no, I mean this. I like if you look at what's going on right now, and you know what I thought about it a lot yesterday because obviously the NFL, the Super Bowl was on. Like the NFL obviously there's no lottery. If you finish with the worst record, you're going to get the first pick. And I would argue that given how every other year or two out of every 3 years, there is some quarterback coming out of the draft who teams look at and is like, this guy is going to save our franchise. I would argue that the incentive structure for getting the top pick, only the top pick, is even more present in the NFL. And yet every year without fail, you will have a team in the last week or the second to last week of the season that has one win or two wins or whatever number of wins, and they are winning a game that they have absolutely no business winning to their detriment. So to say that this is not a problem in the NFL is the understatement of the year. And then baseball, obviously, it's also not an issue because there's a lot of reasons probably why it's different. Baseball, but it's not an issue in baseball either. But we're not talking about, I think maybe why it's come to the forefront of the conversation right now is we're not in April. We're not even in March. We're not even before the All-Star break. And this is what is happening. So, Sean, I don't know if do I have you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I know tanking sent you for a tailspin. but how big of a problem do you think it is? And let me add this part. Do you think it's solvable?
It is solvable, but the way to solve it, it will not ever be implemented. I caught the tail end where you're saying like it's not a problem in the NFL, it's not a problem in the NBA. It's not a problem in the NFL because it's not a problem in NBA, MLB. Major League Baseball. Yeah. It's not a problem in Major League Baseball because you have like your draft is like 70 rounds, plus you have the internet, like the international players don't go in a draft, you sign them as free agents, whatever. So you're building a team through the draft is not the way you build your team in the NBA is different from Major League Baseball. And in the NFL, if I draft somebody, like Michael Smith always said, day two of the NFL draft is where championships are won because anyone I draft in the first round, if it's not a quarterback, is expected to start. And you routinely find starters round two, round three, round four. But in the NBA, unless you got one of the top seven guys, you don't have a shot to win the whole thing. And the only way to, and there used to be two ways, there used to be three ways to to get a star. Now there realistically is two. And not one, and honestly, not one and a half.
Because, I was about to say, like, if you're a team that a guy doesn't, if a superstar doesn't want to get traded to your team, you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So as long as teams, listen, the easy way to do this is to abolish the draft because the draft is ultimately anti-American. But it'll never happen because these small market teams who, and listen, they have a point, you know, they can't necessarily sign any marquee free agents. And this is before the CBA basically killed free agency as we knew it. So they need the draft. And as long as you are a league that is primarily full of black people, there will be certain cities that will be less desirable, and the only way you would end up a player of a certain magnitude would end up with those cities is if he is forced to by the rules of a draft.
Give me an example
of
a city that players would not end up in because of, like, Utah.
Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City, Portland, Sacramento, Memphis. Listen, you can complain all you want, but I'm as CM Punk says, stop me while I'm telling lies. So ultimately, the way to stop it is to abolish the draft. But I always find it interesting when people are like, Adam Silver, do something. Like, the 30 guys that he works for want this. So what is he going to do?
So I have five solutions here that some have been discussed before, some have not been discussed before. I want to pitch them to you guys, and you tell me if any of them are appealing to you. One of them involves abolishing the draft. I literally came up with this morning. And I want both of you guys, please tell me if this is insane. You eliminate the draft, but you keep some semblance of the rookie salary slot structure. So here's what I mean. If you finish with the worst record in the league, you will have the ability to pay any rookie. What does the first pick get probably next year? We're probably getting close to like $15 million, right?
Yeah, like I have no. 15.
I'll look it up.
It's like 4 years or something like that.
The first pick always the first year salary of the first pick of the draft is always like I feel like a little bit less than the non-taxpayer mid-level money. But even if you want to say let's make it a little bit higher than that, let's make it that the team with the worst record gets to pay $15 million in the first year salary for a top pick, or even you can make it even a little bit more than that. You make it 16, 17, 18. I don't know, whatever the number is. But the team with the worst record gets to pay the most money. Team with the second worst record gets to pay the second most money. So on and so forth down the line. And you go down to like maybe the bottom of the top 10. And then after the top 10, maybe it's like a flat, like rookies get a flat salary from there on in. And then you have some sort of restriction so that because this is like the flip side of what, not the flip side, but like the end, other end of the spectrum about what you were saying, Sean, about desirability of cities. I imagine most young men, if they had a choice to live in any American city, are probably going to want to go to LA. Is that fair to say?
LA, okay. I think there's five cities that are in the running, but yeah.
I think LA's probably number one.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, we don't put two.
I will put New York two, Miami three.
I know you stand for Atlanta. You will always stand for Atlanta.
I think the top five cities are LA, New York, Miami, Atlanta, and as I said before, don't sleep on the Valley.
You love your Valley. So whatever. You make it a restriction whereby teams can only spend their quote unquote rookie salary slot. Maybe like you can't spend it more than once every 3 years or something, or like twice every 4 years or 5 years. Mm-hmm. So there is still a benefit that the worst teams get, but ultimately is up to the players, the college players coming out to make the decision. What do you guys think of that? Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Sounds good. That still incentivizes tanking. If we're going to have a draft and you say that the pick can...
No, there'll be no draft. No.
So if there's no draft, then how do you determine... So the worst team can spend the most, and then the players just decide where they want to go.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I also think that with the way the NIL money is going to be cooking, that might not even faze them. But it's a good way, at least for the NBA, to say, well, we're going to incentivize that this is the most that they can make here just in straight salary, and then go from there. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those ideas that I think it's worth a try, because everything else ain't really...
Well, I got some
like
more,
that.
But this is just my first one.
I mean, yeah, I would think that's like a fantastic start, you know, because you think about just what's happening and the shamelessness of it all. The fact that it doesn't even benefit you really to be the worst team in the league anymore because of the flattened odds.
So,
and yet people are still going balls to the wall to tank before we've even gotten to the skills challenge.
So that goes to the next potential solution, which has been bandied about, I think, this year, which is that you eliminate mid-lottery protection. So what's going on right now with Washington and Utah is specifically because they know if they finish with one of the I forget if it's four or five, one of those two worst records, they will keep their pick because they have traded away a top eight protected pick. And we saw even kind of a weirder, a bizarro world version of this sort of thing with the pick protections that the Pacers just, thank you, just put on their pick to the Clippers that it went out in the Zubac trade. Sean, I think the eliminating lotto, mid-lotto protection so that it's either top four or it's like just lottery protected, I think that's the cleanest solution. Do you think that that solution would actually work?
I think it will improve it, but it won't be, yes, it'll make it better. So I think that what Jeff said about the flattened lottery odds, what it has actually, what the unintended consequence of it is that it has moved the tanking further up the standing. So now before it would be like, all right, you're third and you want to tank to be, make sure you have the best odds, or you're fourth if you want to get to second, whatever. Now, if you're closer to the play-in, it's like, all right, like for example, the Miami Heat got into the play-in, won two games, got to the playoffs, got waxed by Cleveland, mm-hmm. and then watched the spot that they would have been in if they didn't make the play-in jump up to get the first pick in the draft.
Yeah.
So if I'm Memphis right now, I believe is like 3.5 games out of the 10th seed. Why? What purpose would it serve me to get to be the 10th seed to get destroyed by Oklahoma City in round one? It makes I think it would improve it because, again, if you have the ninth worst record in the league, you know, you'd have to do a lot of work to get to four.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're still going to have teams who are like, you know, if you're the fifth worst record, like, you're not going to. Ultimately, again, as long as you give these teams an incentive to tank, tanking will exist.
I'm going to pitch something else at you. You talked about flattened lottery odds. What if we went back to when the lottery odds were completely flat? So the Ewing lottery threw the Shaq. Was it
the Shaq one was the first one with the
worst team gets the best worst record. Team. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that was the first.
No. Hold on, because wait, didn't because they won the lottery back to back. Wasn't it after that that they changed?
No. Because they had the worst odds. The second year they had the penny year, they had the worst odds to win the lottery and they won it.
And they just won. Okay, that was just luck. Well, for about 10 years, or maybe not 10 years, for like close to a decade, it was flat lottery odds. It was just random out of the however many teams were in the lottery. I think the pushback to going back to that is the notion that, well, but then that's not fair because then the same team could win it like multiple years in a row, or a team could go many, many years without winning it. What if it was flat flat in relation to your record, like whether you were the 10th worst record or the worst record? That didn't change your odds. The only thing that maybe impacts your odds a little bit, so it's not completely flat, is if like you have just won the lottery. Maybe that knocks a few percentage points off. And maybe if you finish top three in like the last 2 years, that knocks a few percentage points off. Whereas on the flip side, every year you go without finishing in the top three, you get a few extra percentage points, so it slowly builds up. But it is flat in relation to record. I'm not a mathematician, so I can't come up with an exact formula, but I have to think maybe there's a way to do that. Jeff, you're nodding.
Yeah, I get it, because it's like you earn more ping pong balls if you haven't gotten that opportunity. So if you're a repeat participant in the draft, and you, let's say, you finished fifth, sixth, and seventh 3 years in a row.
Sure.
That means by year four,
you should have, relative to your record and where you finish in the season and those odds, you should have like a 10%, 20% better chance to get, to at least just have the opportunity to get a top three pick. So yeah, I think mathematically you can figure it out. I'm just now at this point, just like any piece of technology, when they talk about the development process, you have to have that nefarious conversation where you think, how could this be used for evil as opposed to used for good? So I'm thinking, that's what, everything you're proposing, I'm thinking, well, how can a team utilize this information and use it to their advantage?
So right?
Like, how could they do it? So if everything was flat, I guess if you finished in the top three before, and this is like your second year to be consecutive, you would keep doing what you were doing because you're not getting quote unquote penalized for being in the top three yet. And then in that third year, maybe that's where you're like, okay, we still don't got to win a lot.
Yeah, but
maybe it delays tanking a bit.
But if you're not penalized, if the odds are flat, so I guess so. Okay. Is the danger, to Sean's point about what happened to the Heat last year, do we think that there was a legitimate danger to teams tanking out of the play-in? That's, I think, the danger of the flat, of completely flat lottery odds with this system.
Absolutely. That absolutely would happen. Because, again, this isn't Major League Baseball. This isn't the NFL. Like, an 8 seed has made the finals twice. An 8 seed has won, I think, 6 playoff series ever? 5?
A first round series,
I should say, because the Knicks did it, the Heat did it, the Grizzlies did it,
Nuggets did it,
the Warriors did it. Yeah,
that's it. The five. Yeah.
There would be no like, and again, if I had to choose between, all right, a 11 of whatever percent chance to win the lottery. Or a
humiliation
14. Ritual
or getting humiliated. Like, why would I not choose? Oh, by the way, 1990 is the first year they went to
that's what
it changed
was.
A lottery okay. odds.
14 teams don't make it. So 100 divided by 14 is what, about
7%? Yeah, okay. Like that.
So if I go from a 0% chance to win the lottery to a 7% chance to win the lottery, I might take it. Okay. How about this? This is from, I don't think this is this person's real name, but this is from a Knicks Film School Substack reader who goes by Blimbo Blogden. If that's your real name, bless you. But that was the email. I love this. I'm curious what you guys think.
Okay.
The solution is a team never gets their own draft pick. Just bear with me. Instead, there is an extra draft after free agency where, in order from the worst team to the best team, each team drafts another team's draft pick that they would have control over. For example, if the Wizards are the worst team and they think that next season the Pelicans will have the worst team, why would anybody think the Pelicans would be bad? They can draft the Pelicans draft pick, but you are not allowed to draft your own pick. Thus, no team is ever directly in control of their own draft slot and has zero incentive to tank. I read this and was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Which means it'll never happen.
Why?
Because small market teams will never miss an opportunity to whine and bitch and moan and complain about how unfair the system is.
What's unfair about it? They're in control. They are the ones making the pick. It is after free agency.
No, I understand that. What I'm saying is, okay, let's say
just
Sacramento.
I want to know what is the downside.
I'm explaining the downside.
Okay.
Let's say, currently I think Sacramento is the worst record in the league.
Let's say it's Sacramento.
So let's say Sacramento says, you know what? We're gonna pick New Orleans. Right?
Great.
And New Orleans all of a sudden is frisky and they get to like 39 wins, whatever, right?
So that's a bad job by Sacramento.
Oh, no. But what will happen is then they will say, we're trying to rebuild our team, and we can't even rebuild our team because of the mechanism is in the hands of others. That's not fair. We should be able to build our team with all aspects of, like, they would just find a way to complain because they'll say it's not fair. That's what would happen.
I think
it's a great idea. I'm just telling you, like, these teams, particularly small market teams, will never miss an opportunity to complain about how something's not fair.
Listen, right? So if we're going off of the jumping off point of something that nobody will complain about, then it needs to stay the way it is right now. Mm-hmm. Except it's not even that people are complaining. Like, yes, us NBA talking head people who have podcast hours to fill are complaining about it. And people who are really plugged in to the NBA are like, this is bad for the sport. I don't even know that fans are complaining about it. They're just not showing up and they're not watching their teams. And look at the people at a Wizards game. Look at the people, like, who's going to Kings games? Who's going to, you know, well, nobody goes to New Orleans games anyway, so that's probably a bad example. But you cannot tell me that it just because there was nobody complaining about it right now, that this is not significantly detrimental to the sport and the health of the league. I guess is that, and maybe that's the fundamental. Maybe we're dancing around the core issue, and that's what we should be discussing. I don't know, but like that's why I started off by asking you guys: is there a problem? You know.
Here's one thing I'll say. If we've gotten to the point where somebody has to go blue sky, big brain, diabolical, outside the box, destroy the box method to make this draft fair and equitable, then it means that the draft has an inherent problem.
Of course.
Like, I think that is the most chaotic idea I've heard, which means it's awesome. Like, I could imagine that draft lottery would be cinema. Now, I think the one downside is in this world where we feel like we have to fucking bet on every single aspect of life. I can only imagine what the markets would be for who's going to get whose pick.
Well, one point of clarification. There is no lottery here. If the team that finishes with the worst record
gets the first choice
they get the first choice, but the team that finishes with the worst record the next year, whoever that team is, whoever has drafted their the pick other team's the previous pick. Year, it just goes to them. It's not like they get the best odds. It is just they. So again, going back to the example, I'll spell it out. Let's say, so this year, let's say the Wizards finish with the worst record and they pick the Pelicans pick next year. If the Pelicans finish with the worst record next year, the Wizards will just get the first pick in the draft because they have picked the Pelicans pick. There is no
basically
lottery.
Basically, it's like, who do we think is going to be the worst team in the league
exactly.
next year?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
And if you have selected a team that overperforms and make the playoffs, then you're stuck with the 16th pick or the whatever pick in the draft.
So the opposite would happen. Then the Pelicans would try to win games so that you don't get the best draft choice. Is that what you're trying to like spark?
Well, it's the Pelicans are trying to win games because they know that they are not in control of their pick. So their wins right. or losses do not affect the draft pick that they get. And oh, by the way, you know what else would this would have incentivized? Could you imagine how hard certain teams would be playing in certain games when they know that if beating that team increases their own odds of getting a top pick? Imagine a late season game between two like bad teams, one of which owns the other team's pick.
Right. Oh, they're like the worst team and the second worst team separated by one game. And that one.
Who knows?
Win
maybe they picked each other's freaking pick.
Would you be allowed to trade picks?
One of you was going to ask that. I don't think that should be.
Because
allowed.
You know that happens and we're trying to find our way back.
No, that's not the problem. That can't
about,
be allowed.
Think about,
then you can't
the
trade
Derek
for your
Lively
own pick.
Lively shit was the most egregious. But this Wizards pick thing, I feel like low key. It's way worse. Like, I've talked to people I know
who are Wizards fans, and they spoke like, why is everybody complaining? Like, the Yak, like, you know, these guys are injured. I don't understand why folks are complaining. And I'm like, well, specifically, from the perspective of the Knicks organization, this is the second time within the span of 4 or 5 years that a team is purposely tanking to screw them out of getting a protected pick. And secondly, it isn't as if you're acquiring this talent knowing that they're out for the season. You're choosing for them to rest up and get ready for 2027 when 2026 is already going on. Like, Trey could play right now if he wanted to. Like, let's cut the shit. Trey could play right now if he wanted to, but now it's a quad and we're reevaluating and we're doing all of this. It is cheapening and ruining the game. It just is, because, hey, if y'all start winning and building a chemistry, isn't that as beneficial to your team next season as it would be to get a high-level draft pick and be in this process again? So, yeah, I do think when it's as blatant as it is, somebody needs to step up. Because I also remember once upon a time when a basketball team lost second-round draft compensation because of literal family ties. Where we all are going to sit here and act like if your freaking kid was going to play for a team that you coached for, and the general manager and the president was also related to them through a bond of Christ, right? That nobody would say anything to anybody. They would just meet up at dinner and have to be sequestered. Yes. Because, God forbid, we ruin the sanctity of the same NBA that watched Luka and Kyrie sip a Mai Tai on the sideline so that they could draft Derek Lively. Ugh. What are we doing here? So if the integrity is so important that you would take a second round pick from a team for a situation that you literally cannot control, you literally cannot realistically control. But then you turn a blind eye to this? What are we really doing here? Like, seriously, what are we really doing here? And I'd say this if it was any other team, because this is ridiculous. Like, real talk, this is ridiculous. What the Jazz are doing is fucking unreal. Unreal.
We've lost the plot. I only had one other potential solution, which I'll pitch quick, which is that you flip the incentive at some point in the middle of the season, where after this point, wins increase your lottery odds. So more wins equal a better pick. I was thinking you could do it. I was thinking you could do it that wins only start counting once your team has been mathematically eliminated from the postseason, but they cannot start counting in the positive sense until after the All-Star break. I say this, and I will note that there are probably going to be two teams either tonight or tomorrow, depending on how a few results go, that will become officially eliminated from playoff contention in the next, again, 24 to 48 hours.
That's crazy.
And it would be, but to be clear, it would not be winning percentage based. It would be total wins. So again, if the Kings got eliminated now from after the All-Star break until the end of the year, if they finish with the most wins in that period of time, they would get the most lottery balls. And then second most wins get the second most lottery balls, and so on and so forth. So that was my only other solution, which I think also has been bandied about. I'm not the first person to think of that solution, but yeah, I don't know if that's going to do it.
I just abolish the draft.
totally.
I think the pool, like, similar to what MLB does with the international amateurs, where their slots and the worst teams get more money than the bottom teams. Because honestly, and the reason why I say the draft's anti-American is because, you know,
oh, it is.
In what other aspect of life where, all right, you graduate from college and then you sit there and then all of a sudden you want to work for you're a writer and you want to work for Newsday, but the Orlando Sun Sentinel comes, you know,
it's a great cop, man.
Yeah. Like, so ultimately if you're, I would do the thing where the pool money, because you know what the other thing is, the CBA And people don't realize, people tend not to realize this, but like every single CBA, every single time the CBA is changed is to help small, is to benefit small market teams.
Yes.
And there are always unintended consequences of these things. And I think the most underrated aspect of the CBA that led to unintended consequences for small market teams is the max salary. Because guess what? If I'm Utah, all right, okay, who's going to be free agent? Who's a premier free agent this year? Well, if they were going to go to free agency.
A free agent?
Yeah.
Mitchell Robinson.
All right, let's go back to like 2013, right? And the Melo year, right?
Okay.
If Utah wanted to, Utah should be able to get like, you know what, Carmelo Anthony, we're going to offer you $55 million a year to come to our team.
Well, now you're getting into a whole, this is revamping everything.
No, what I'm saying is if anyone's a free agent, and let's say someone actually hits free, let's say Giannis decides to go to free agency in 2027.
Sure.
Right? Literally every team could offer him the most money. So as Utah or New Orleans or Portland, there is literally no advantage. There's nothing I can offer you that say like, yeah, don't consider New York, don't consider Miami, don't consider LA, because I can only literally offer you the max amount of money. Right. So yeah. Now to the first suggestion you made, guess what? You make them make a choice. It's like, all right, guess what? If you want to, you can go play. You want to go play in New York, because New York right now has the fifth best record in the league. So they would be 26, which means $2.8 million. So, Gabe, yeah, guess what? If you want to take $2.8 million and pass up making 14 to go play in New York, go ahead. That's a free market economy that we live, that literally applies for everything else in our lives. That's why that should happen.
I don't think it's nuts. I think to Jeff's point, you know what's nuts? What's going on right now? That's what's nuts.
It's not even Valentine's Day and teams are just saying like, our season's over and throwing up their hands. It's crazy.
The thing that bothers me, here's where I'm bothered by it. This is just me. My favorite thing to do when the Knicks are good, usually, because when the Knicks are awful, I don't love watching NBA basketball as much. When the Knicks are good, my favorite thing in the world to do is just watch the NBA on nights that the Knicks are not playing, because it's stress-free, my team's good, and it's just like a good time. And then I go and I turn and I see there's whatever, 6 or 7 or 8, however many games are on tonight. And out of those however many games, half are not worth tuning into. Which is, I mean, it's, I guess I'm being selfish as a fan that I want a whole bunch of watchable games, but I don't know, man.
It's not selfish.
To your point, John, Detroit, Charlotte tonight, if Charlotte had decided to tank away their season, that would have been a punt. Now it's a marquee matchup at 7 o'clock on the schedule, as opposed to, I don't know, Chicago, Brooklyn.
Oh, Jesus.
Good luck with that. And even with Chicago, you're just going to see a lot of people fight for their life. That might be a good game because you're watching people play for their NBA lives.
Hold on. Don't stop there.
Chicago,
Brooklyn, Utah, Miami, Milwaukee, Orlando,
Sacramento, Pelicans.
Sacramento, New Orleans, Cleveland, Denver, good game. Atlanta, Minnesota.
That'll be good. Yeah. At least it'll be, they're going to compete.
Memphis Warriors, trash. OKCLA, good game. And then Philadelphia, Portland, good game. Should so how many good game, games yeah. do we count? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many?
Maybe 5.
How many tanking? There's at least as many tanking infected games as there are non-tanking infected games.
And you cannot asked me to pay $159, $169, $170, whatever it is for League Pass. Well,
they can, dude. And they do.
I mean, they can, but, and then put this, like, to your point, like, I pay, like, if you pay for League Pass and you're like, all right, oh, look, there's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, there's 10 games on tonight, and you're like, only 3.5 of them are games you'd care about to watch as a neutral NBA fan. I guess that's a terrible product.
I'm glad we had this discussion because at least it solidified the fact that we have to do something. And I don't know, man. I don't know if we're, I don't think. Last thought. Do we think anything's going to happen?
No, I don't.
I think the because the NBA is a very public relations affected league. I think the removing protections, only protecting top four, that'll happen.
I think that's going to be the change.
And that'll be like, hey, look, see? And then
we did a thing.
Yeah, we did a thing. Other than that, there's no incentive for these rich guys to turn down any type of corporate social or any type of corporate welfare. None.
Well, this was fun. Jeff, last thought from you.
Yeah, I see some talk in the comments trying to make a false equivalence between inside's criticisms of the league and what we're saying right now, pretty much trying to make the equivalent that what we're doing right now is what people accuse inside of doing. And what I will say is that there is a difference. There's a difference between projecting on a schedule teams that are clearly tanking and saying there's no incentive to watch if they are not going to compete, as opposed to seeing two teams who may not be good and automatically writing it off because you feel like somebody doesn't want to watch, or who would want to watch this anyway, or even when teams are good.
Yeah.
And you may say, they don't want to watch that anyway. I think there's a little bit of a difference. We're projecting based off of what people are saying, not like, hey, we had this on the schedule, and it's like, why would the fans of the teams go out to see that?
Dude, yes. I think you're overthinking it. Simple. We're not a league partner.
That too?
We are not paid by the NBA to broadcast games.
We're not ambassadors of the league.
Yes. No, we are ambassadors of the league, but we are not
official
league
ambassadors.
We are not anyone can be ambassador. We are not a league partner. The league does not give us millions of dollars to display the product and then for us to then shit on it. Like, do you think it's a coincidence that there's never been any version of inside the NBA for the NFL? Because Roger Dale will pick the phone and be like, "What are you doing?"
He wouldn't even pick up the phone. He has a button. I mean,
the closest you're gonna get is NFL on Fox.
But ironically,
that's the closest.
It's not even close. Like, really. Ironically, what we're discussing is something that we believe. We are discussing situations, proposals that we believe would help the league, that will make the league more watchable, that will make the more people in the league. What we're not sitting here saying is that all these guys suck and they stink and none of them are any good. And they should, because I didn't get paid what they're getting paid, and I didn't watch the games. And like, we're not doing that. Like, Jeff, you better than me for giving that dude energy, because he just come on, you just talk Jeff, just to talk.
Jeff is the angel on our collective shoulder here.
I mean, there's a lot of stupid Knicks fans in the fan base, but
stupid
don't get
fans
me started on that.
There's stupid. Every fan base has stupid fans,
but our fan base. We got some fucking idiots.
Every fan base has
every fan base does.
That's because
there's
more.
We got some
that's because
idiots.
There's more Knicks fans. That's the only reason. Every fan, I would hope that there's a greater percentage of smart Knicks fans than not smart Knicks fans.
Oh, there is.
But there's more not smart Knicks fans because there's just more
Knicks
fans.
There's a lot of stupid fans that watch the NBA. But it. I feel like I'm in the movie They Live. With some of the takes that I see coming out off of internet. I don't think they're real people. And if they are, they don't have half this energy when you have a real life conversation.
Yo, I love it. You know what's funny? Jeff always talks about how I like to curse people on the internet, which is true. But stupid Knicks fan gets under Jeff's skin like nothing you've ever
because
seen before.
Because it's like, yo, what are we doing? And then you become the amorphous Knicks fans that they try to categorize the whole fan base as if one, these same idiots don't exist across every NBA landscape. And two,
it's the price of being a New Yorker.
You know why?
It's like Reggie Jackson said, they don't boo nobody.
Oh, of course.
You know what that is, Jeff? This is your success taking a shot at you. What are you going to do now? How are you going to deal with it? You're going to become unsuccessful? You want to be from Sacramento? You want to be from New Orleans? You want to be from Portland? You want to be from Memphis?
Do you want to be?
Can we finally say that Sacramento is the worst team of the 21st century? Can we put all that other stuff to bed? Like how they try to?
They
put
were
that
always
on the
worst. They were always.
I mean, officially now. They officially now.
Were. They always were.
I want to see all these people wear a Kings uniform at some point next to Mr. Plowden.
Enrique Freeman. That is going to be my new FC. That's going to be my new FC. Oh, by the way,
yes.
Mo Diawara guy is kind of good, huh?
Oh, this whole episode could have been a Mo Diawara love fest.
Shout out to him scoring 7 points on Sunday.
10 points.
Oh, 10.
Mm. He was 4 for 4. 2 threes, 2 twos.
Wish he could have gave 2 points on Friday. You know, he didn't need that.
Listen, beggars can't be choosers.
I was begging on Friday. You can ask Sean. I was begging, boy. I was going through all the stages.
Oh, that's belated shout out to both of you guys for holding it down at the watch party. Is the watch party curse back?
No.
No.
No. No.
Curses don't exist. Although, I was told that there was another watch party held by another Knicks content creation company, and apparently they're the reason for the watch party curse.
They've been given the label. They've been officially given the label.
Okay, as long as we don't get the label.
I cannot, it's kind of nasty. That's kind of nasty agenda, for folks. But you know, many people are saying that.
All
right, we really got to go. We have a Fanatics meeting in 15 minutes. Sean, did you have a cocktail on set on Friday?
On Friday, I did.
What cocktail?
I had a Manhattan.
How was it? Good?
It was good. In fact, shout out to Penn 6. They have a drink called the 31st Street Manhattan. I had that one.
Okay.
So shout out to Penn 6. I did have a cocktail. I also had a few cocktails last night.
I wouldn't expect anything else. Jeff, I hope your cocktail consumption was good this weekend as well.
It was pretty solid. It was pretty solid. Like, you know, it's been a fitness 2026, and I had this weekend earmarked for
foolishness.
Yes, I had it earmarked to give me that error room. So.
My wife sent me a reel from some person. I don't even know if they're a doctor, but like, if like something like based on like current toxicology standards or whatever, like you should be, if we were creating rules for alcohol now, we would be advised to have no more than like a half a glass of wine a year. And I was like, I'm like, why the fuck are you sending me this?
Half a glass. Wait a minute.
I'll send it to you. I will send you the thing.
Half a glass of wine. I mean, well, you know.
How big is the glass?
I would encourage people not to poison themselves.
It's a glass the size of my basement. Because if it's anything less than that, then I'm fucked.
Half a glass is crazy. Oh, well.
All right.
I would hate for y'all to have seen me during the pandemic.
Oh, God. Because, boy. Yeah, well. Listen, I'm just, don't kill the messenger. although I was not pleased with my wife for sending me this. All right, this was great, as it always is. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Sean. We're almost at the All-Star break. I don't know what's going on for next week because I'm going to be away in Florida, and I very much need some kind of a recharge. But I will see if maybe we get something out at least on the feed for next week, so people are not left completely wanting. But whenever we see you, we'll see you. It's not going to be too long. You could also catch these guys on after school games this week?
Thursday.
Okay, great. There we go. Thursday after school, Sean and Jeff always do watch anything that they are on. And thanks for checking out another episode of NBA Takedown. We'll be back with more fun and games before you know it.